Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Addison Godfrey. In 2011, the Syrian Revolution attempted to overthrow the Assad regime. But by 2014, a group that called themselves the Islamic State, or ISIS, stepped in to fill the power vacuum left by the revolution. ISIS invaded Raqqa, one of Syria's cities, and quickly cut off Raqqa from the rest of the world. A group of civilian journalists banded together to create Raqqa is Being Slaughtered Silently, an organization dedicated to bringing the atrocities committed by ISIS to light. I'm joined in the studio by Abdelaziz Alhamza, who goes by Aziz. He's the co-founder and spokesperson for Raqqa is Being Slaughtered Silently. Aziz, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, sure.
When the Syrian Revolution began, you've said you were a college student who wasn't involved in politics, but now you're an award-winning journalist and political activist. What changed?
Yeah, it was like a huge change in my life. So I grew up in a medium kind of a wealthy family, so I had nothing to care about. I was like just in troubles all the time, like stealing money from my dad. And then when the revolution started, I was like so impacted by the revolution, hearing like what other people are doing or what other people have been through, how people are getting killed every day. And I couldn't just be silent. I was thinking that it might be me, it might be any person that I love. So I decided like just to stand against the government and join the revolution. Then things started to develop. So I started as a protester, and then I started to film the protest and like send it to the media organizations. And then we started to do the local coordinations, like to call people for protests and organize the protests. I didn't see myself one day being a journalist or being where I am right now.
So how did Raqqa is Being Slaughtered Silently begin?
So after ISIS took over Raqqa, they prevented all the media organizations and journalists to enter the city and cover the reality of what's going on. So ISIS committed many human rights violations against the civilians. And for my colleagues and I, we were all activists against the Syrian regime. So when ISIS came, we decided to report what's really going on to show the atrocities of ISIS. That was like a duty for us to do it for our cities.
What was ISIS's reaction to the reporting by Raqqa is Being Slaughtered Silently?
So ISIS tried to shut us down in several ways. They started by putting like checkpoints all over the city, then they spread security cameras. And later on, since they couldn't stop us, they arrested some of our colleagues and they killed them, they executed them. And then they couldn't also stop us, so they tried to hunt us. They assassinated a couple of my colleagues outside. Then they arrested family members, they killed them. And then they threatened all of us, and they announced that any of us or anyone who's related to us will be killed or executed in case they will arrest him or her. So they tried on all this way. So like spreading fake news about us, like giving awards for anybody who would give any information about us. So all these ways they tried to use it to stop us, but fortunately they couldn't.
You've said that ISIS was different from other militant groups. In what ways?
So for ISIS, they didn't fear anything. So, and they wanted to shock everybody, you know, to scare everybody. So they started with the public execution, with the atrocities, and they were calling everybody to come and witness all these executions. So they didn't try to hide their crimes. They wanted everybody to show, to see it. So in order not to get anyone to do anything against them, to get people be scared all the time and not even think to do anything against ISIS, they killed people in different brutal ways that nobody would think about. Like they burned people, they used electricity, drowning people in water, tying someone in two cars and let the two cars going in the opposite way. So all these things, and they used high quality videos to film all most of their executions and most of the stuff that they're doing. So to shake all those people. That why ISIS is different than the other groups.
You've mentioned before the high quality videos that ISIS uses and how the war against ISIS seems like it's fought as much in the media as it is on the front lines. Why do you think media and propaganda is such a powerful tool for both sides?
The media is like the best way to get people recruited or like brainwashed. Right now with the media, with the internet, you can reach anyone in like everywhere. So you can be here in the US reaching someone like in China or like someone in Japan or like someone in Europe or in Syria or in Iraq. So that's what ISIS did. So they wanted to spread their message out to get everyone to know about them. And the media and the internet was the only way for them to do it. And then they do it like in a professional way to let everybody know that they're not a group of gangs who are trying to do something. They are like an organized professional terrorism group. And for them, they use all this high like quality in order to get other things. So there are like many people who are like obsessed with video games or all this stuff. So it was like also a way for them to say like, hey, why are you sitting home and playing with your computers? Like, come, it's reality. Come grab a gun, steal a car and shoot some people. And there are like many people who would love to do that thing. So many people, they went only for that things. So not all the people who went and joined ISIS, they believed in ISIS. ISIS like put itself in different ways. So they said like, if you don't have money, come, we give you money. So there are like many homeless. They have like no hope, where they were ignored by their own governments, by their own people, by the community itself. They've been facing like racism. So they found ISIS as a solution. So for like different several reasons, people went and joined. Other like to get power. So I've researched many people who went and joined from like Europe and different country. It was not only because they believed in ISIS, and many of them, they didn't really. So they went for other reasons.
There was a documentary created about Raqqa is being slaughtered silently. It was released in 2017 called City of Ghosts. In the documentary, your Raqqa is being slaughtered silently co-founder, Hamoud al-Moussa, says that ISIS doesn't represent the Islam he knows. What did he mean by that?
So the thing ISIS presented itself as the representer of them, of Muslims all over the world. And there are like many facts that many people, they don't know about, that the majority of ISIS victims are Muslims. So ISIS represents itself as a Muslim Sunni group, and the majority of the victims are Muslim Sunnis. If they were like a real like representative of Islam, you'd find like all Muslims following them. But the majority of Muslims, even like Muslim leaders, they're like against them. And in general, Islam doesn't call anybody to kill anyone else, any like innocent people. And that's what ISIS are doing. They're like killing people just to get their interests, just to get power.
So in exposing the atrocities committed by ISIS, Raqqa is being slaughtered silently is using citizen journalism. But the notion of citizen journalism has come under attack. What would you say to those who oppose the idea of civilians using social media to disseminate information?
So the thing, there are like many conflict areas or zones where nobody can reach. There are like many journalists or media organizations, they can go to Syria and cover what's going on. Even like the insurance companies, like they ask for like millions of dollars for anyone who's going to Syria. And like many of them, they don't offer any insurance. So the media organizations stop sending reporters to Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, like many countries. So it's rarely to find like a journalist there or a foreign journalist. So in this situation, you would get the local themselves to report about what's going on. Otherwise, it would be only fake news. And it's been like a problem not only in the conflict zones, it's been everywhere. Right now, like the culture of citizen journalism, it's being like the real media. So if you want to follow like politics or conflicts or war, most of the news are coming from locals themselves. And then those locals who turn to be citizen journalists, they got enough training how to report about things, how to write articles, how to film, how to take photos, how to be like realistic, how to present their work with evidence. So you need like the access to the news, to the information. And then like when you are speaking about a case or something related to you, you would do it in a way more honest than someone who's not related to the case or haven't been to the area or like doesn't speak the language.
Since beginning the organization, you and co-founder Hamoud Al-Moussa have been forced to leave Syria for your own safety. How do you maintain connections with correspondents in Raqqa?
Basically, we work in two teams. So we have like the first team in Raqqa itself. So they gather, collect info, photos, videos, and they send it to our second team outside, which include Hamoud, me, and other colleagues. So we are like a big network outside, so we have other colleagues. So we get the news from our first team. It goes like through different filters and different stuff. We try to verify the information with everybody in the network. And then there is like a team to decide what's the best time to publish it to keep the safety for everybody. So the safety of our colleagues is our like main priority. So we pick the best time to publish it, and sometimes we get many important stuff and photos or videos and we don't publish it for the safety of the organization members. So we do have like process that we use to get the work or like the stuff published, and we do all that things in encrypted means.
How do members of the internal team, the team that is in Raqqa, get the information out?
So they are provided with equipment to film and move around. At the same time, we are local. So even like the majority of ISIS fighters or members are foreigners. So we're from the city. So we know every single feet in the city. So we know how to move. We know how to do stuff. We know how to collect information. And since we're local and we're like a tribe community, everybody's connected with the others in a certain way. So if I don't know that person, I might know his brother, his cousin, or someone who's connected with. So there are like some people who joined ISIS, so you can get info through their like family members, through them like in indirect way. So, and that was like a way to come up with different and exclusive news. So there are like different ways and strategies that we use to get and gather information. And just like being there and like living the daily like airstrike atrocities and being a witness.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Addison Godfrey. Our guest is Aziz Al-Hamza, co-founder and spokesperson for Raqqa is Being Slaughtered Silently, a group of civilian journalists who exposed the crimes of ISIS in Raqqa, Syria. Aziz, after fleeing Syria, you were able to make it to Germany. How did it feel to leave Raqqa?
It was so hard. It was like not my decision. I've never thought like to leave Raqqa, especially after the revolution started. But after ISIS controlled the city, they went after us, and I was like one of the members that they went after me. They tried to arrest me in Raqqa. I was lucky enough not to be home. Then I had no other choice, either like to stay hidden and being killed any second they arrest me, or just leave. So I decided to leave, and when I left, I decided not to be silent and do something.
One member of your organization was assassinated while living in Turkey. Was it a shock to discover that you weren't safe even after leaving Syria?
Yeah, so there were like three members who were assassinated in Turkey. So yeah, we know that we are all threatened wherever we are. Like even for me being in Germany, I was threatened. So, and like different members who are like even in different countries, they also got the threats, like a death threat. So it was hard to lose a friend, a family member, because we consider ourselves as a family. So it was a hard thing because I speak with those people, with those friends and colleagues more than I speak with my real family. So we speak every day, so almost every hour. So it was like a huge gap that we had and we still have in our life. But that was also a motive for us to complete what we were doing. So whenever we say that we were doing too much and it's so risky, we think about them. After like the first member who got killed, none of us came up with the idea of stopping the work or it's so risky. the members of the group, they always come and they say, let's do something new, let's develop the work. So it's always how to develop the work. Like, we never like had a discuss to stop the work.
When you were threatened in Germany, you declined police protection. Why?
For several reasons. Like, mainly I don't believe in something called bodyguard, or because they are humans. I don't want to put someone's life in dangerous in order to protect myself. I feel it's like unfair. So that in general, and like specifically, like I have members and friends who are like facing like a daily death. They're facing airstrike atrocities, and it's not fair for them being in these conditions, fighting for getting in news, and for me being in Germany under protection. So it was not fair at all. So that was like obvious for me that like I would not accept any protection.
Do you ever feel survivor's guilt?
Sometimes, yes, but I don't know. Like, we got like, many times I was supposed to be killed, and I survived many things when I was in Syria. Like, I've witnessed many people being killed. I've witnessed too much of blood. So I've witnessed family members, friends being killed. So I feel that I'm a survivor, but sometimes like being a survivor is not the best thing.
The 2017 documentary City of Ghosts, which tells the story of your organization, Raqqa, is being slaughtered silently, also shows a little bit about what life was like for you in Germany. In particular, there's footage from an anti-refugee rally in Berlin, and you're seen trying to keep the peace as Syrian demonstrators face Germans calling for deportation. What was it like to be met with anti-immigration sentiment as a refugee after everything that you and your colleagues have gone through?
Yeah, so the thing, like, those people, they consider us as a terrorist, and ISIS consider us as, like, unbelievers or, like, spies or people who should be killed. You know, just, like, to be in between those two people and, like, think about it. So, in general, like, they are, like, both against us. So I don't see like any difference between them, you know. They all use like the same language, so it's like different words, but in general it's like the same language. Like, yeah, kill them, deport them. For me, I don't feel like any difference.
Many refugees who leave their home countries do so at great personal cost. Your brother lost his life when fleeing Syria by boat. What was that like for you?
It was a nightmare. So he had to leave because he was also hunted, and he couldn't stay there anymore. And he couldn't stay in Turkey because ISIS had a hand in Turkey. So he was fleeing death, but death was after.
Do you ever wish that your brother had stayed in Syria instead of fleeing?
No.
Why not?
He might be killed in a brutal way.
Do you think these personal costs are acknowledged by individuals who claim to be anti-refugee?
I don't think so. The thing with those people is like so complicated because they are like besieged in a circle of information and news and leaders or people who were giving them orders. I got to meet a couple of them, and they had like zero idea what's going on. So they only follow rules. So they are like kind of organization or like something organized where they follow like certain people, like whatever they say. They have zero knowledge about like most of the things. So when you ask them like where is Syria on the map, they have no idea, you know. If you ask them like why people are fleeing Syria, they say like, yeah, to take our jobs. Like, okay, what's going on in Syria? We don't know. But the thing, if they would live under the same like conditions, I'm sure they would not stay. So most of the people would not survive under like airstrike, like barrel bombs, chemical attacks. Syrians have been killed in all like ways that people can imagine or not, like electricity, water, like throwing people in water, like all this crazy stuff. So most of the people would flee, if not for themselves, for their families, for their kids, for the people that they love. So that's what happened was like all like the people, not all in Syria, in different countries. So people, if they didn't leave because of themselves, they did it for someone they love.
In the 2017 documentary, City of Ghosts, you point out that ISIS is no longer just Syria's problem. You say that the world turned a blind eye to ISIS's crimes for 5 years, but now everyone is watching. How did it feel to be risking your life to report on the atrocities committed by ISIS, only to have the world look the other way?
Because it's so important, because if is it not for my generation, maybe for the next generation. So it's all started as an ideology. It started like with Taliban, then turned to be Al-Qaeda. And everyone was shocked of the idea of Al-Qaeda, or like what happened here in the US or in different countries in Afghanistan. And nobody thought that another brutal group would come and replace Al-Qaeda. So when ISIS came, everybody started to forget about Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda was not mentioned anymore. All the attention was about ISIS. And ISIS was not a new thing. It was not a new group that like exists from nowhere. So it was like a union between Al-Qaeda itself, like a part of Al-Qaeda and Islamic State in Iraq. And then they were able like to shock the entire world. So they were able like to do attacks everywhere. Their ideology was not like surrounded or besieged in Syria or in Iraq. We've seen ISIS here in the US with the attacks. We've seen ISIS in Europe, in Asia, in Africa, almost everywhere. And right now they are like the ideology itself is expanded. So it's not about the group or if the group exists in this area or not. It's about the ideology. And ISIS was able like to reach many people. So we need to fight with the same way. So airstrikes, bomb would not solve or kill this ideology. You can't kill an ideology with airstrikes or like with like military solution. So you need to replace this ideology or come up with a new ideology that would kill the main ideology. So like today it's in Syria and Iraq, and I've never thought that we would have something like ISIS in Syria. So I remember like being a kid watching Afghanistan, I was like shocked, and I didn't think, like, I thought, yeah, Afghanistan is, like, all the way far from Syria. But we have something more brutal than Al-Qaeda, which is ISIS. So if this ideology would not be called ISIS or, like, something more brutal than ISIS might show up in anywhere, in any time, in somewhere else in the world.
Is this ideology the reason that you think the Syrian revolution failed?
No, the thing that the Syrians themselves were left alone, so it started as like peaceful protests, like peaceful protesters facing like a brutal regime, the Assad regime, and like for like almost 9 months being killed every day. People, they were like, they avoided like the military solution, so they kept protesting peacefully. But the thing, nobody did anything, you know, so thousands of people got killed and the international community was watching. So if the international community would do something, they could stop like the Syrian regime early in the beginning, and we would not ended up with ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and all this complicated situation and thousands of people being killed.
How is Raqqa is being slaughtered silently fighting against ISIS's ideology?
So we're providing like the reality. We're providing the truth of what's going on. So it's all about knowledge. So they always like film like the areas that they control as a heaven or paradise. And they say that all people who live in this like places, they're like so happy. There's like no suffering. There's like nothing. So we go and show like the people who are starving, people waiting in lines in order to get some food, people having no jobs, like how ISIS are recruiting their children, like sharing stories of many families who lost their children because of ISIS, like losing like a kid who's like 8 or 9 years old to be like a time bomb, like for ISIS to send him to bomb himself, to let the leader escape in the battle. So all this like simple stories, like personal stories that we share from people who've suffered, so that would make a huge impact on the people. Because if you would say like, yeah, like right now everything turned to be numbers. So if you would say like, yeah, thousands of people get killed, like millions of people get killed, people kind of use of that. So, but when you share like one story, the story might touch many people and change their mind or their ideology.
How is life in Raqqa today?
It's so hard right now. So after ISIS has been defeated, most of the city got destroyed. Like right now, 80% of the city is destroyed by the international coalition led by the US airstrikes. And last year, and the number of civilians who've been killed by the international community was like way more than the number of civilians who've got killed by ISIS itself. So the people of Raqqa have been suffering not only from ISIS but from the international community and other groups. So right now, like after like ISIS being defeated, the city has been left alone, so nobody is in charge of it. So they just got ISIS defeated, and Raqqa is not in the news anymore. So it was like in the front page all the time. Right now, like almost everybody forgot about it. So there is like no scenario. There is like no one who's in charge or like someone who's planning for the future of the city, because nobody care about the civilians. The main thing that the international community and most of the people were like how to get rid of ISIS, and the international community didn't think what will happen for those people.
Why do you think it took so long for Raqqa to receive international attention?
Raqqa was like isolated from Syria, and all the attention was like on the capital, like on Damascus, Aleppo, the bigger cities. And ISIS was like the only one who noticed how Raqqa is important, because it's like it's full of sources, so they don't need anything. So they do have like the oil, the gas, the guns, like agriculture, like tourism, like stuff, antiques, like borders with Turkey, close to Iraq. The only one who noticed that thing was like ISIS, and then when ISIS came and showed like how they could use like the sources of Raqqa, the international community was aware about what's going on in Raqqa.
Do you think you'll be able to return to Raqqa someday?
I hope so. So that's like one of my dreams, just to go back, but the thing's not something that I can't decide right now, so it's over my powers.
Thank you for talking with me.
Yeah, sure.
Aziz El Hamza, co-founder and spokesperson for Raqqa Is Being Slaughtered Silently. To listen to more Take Note interviews, go to our website at wpsu.org/take note. I'm Addison Godfrey, WPSU.